Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Speedy Digest. It seems like every show we have, you know, immediately when I hear the beep on my phone when the show begins or the recording starts, I always want to start talking, and then I have to, remember I have to wait until the Blog Talk Radio, I guess, I don't know exactly what they call it, but the mark of that, and it seems like every show it gets longer and longer and longer. I almost made a mistake tonight, but hope everyone is having a great night, and finally Joseph just now called in, and so talk a little bit about your week, guys, since we last talked on Wednesday.
Yes. Well, for once, I was not sightseeing, so I got the weekend off, but it was good to recharge some batteries and check out the cup race. Sunday was really nice and all that. Been preparing for length like the next day of astronomy and also preparing for this show. And, you know, it's going to be about the same as this week as it was last week.
Yeah, good. And Kyle?
Yeah, it's been a good week for me, and I have classes and everything. That's just the norm of it, you know, a big week at Penn State, as some of you might have heard with the whole the postseason bowl ban being lifted. But I won't get into that because we're talking racing tonight. But other than that, it's been a pretty good week. Like I said, the NFL started again. And like I said, college football is in full swing. So it's been a good week, you know, just catching up on some things, you know, just watching the Richmond weekend. And, you know, we're going to the chase now, so I'm ready for this weekend.
And finally, Joseph came on, and I actually see that you got kicked off, and then you called back in. So what's up?
Hi, Brett. How are you? Sorry about that. My phone is being a little bipolar tonight. How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, Kyle's going to make fun of me for my accent tonight, guys.
You said that, not me.
What you guys talking about? We have a great show.
All right. Well, my week was awesome. This week I've been, you know, just kind of starting to get things decided on college and stuff for next August. So, yay me.
Yeah,
and,
college. You're growing up. Where are the youth gone? At least we're not like Kyle that goes to the state pen.
Oh, geez, you guys are funny. But anyway, yeah, we have an awesome show tonight, and I'm actually really excited for this one. So let's start it. All right, first deal of discussion is that, you know, here lately, the NFL, there's been some bad things over there with that situation. And so I'm going to take it over to my panel to discuss maybe to talk a little about differences, how NASCAR is good versus what other people think NASCAR is. And so for this topic, I'm going to start it out with Joseph.
See, here's what happened. Ray Rice is a schmuck. Okay, that's number one. A schmuck, if you don't know what that means, means you're very stupid and disrespectful. Okay? Are you with me so far?
Sure.
Well, are you with
Go
me
ahead.
Or not? All right,
continue
so basically,
on.
Roger Goodell denied the fact that he saw the video when it is very clear that indeed he and other NFL executives did see the video. Now, this is a very bad situation for the NFL because you're putting everyone in a bad situation to begin with their arrest for domestic abuse. But the real thing is, why does a video make someone get suspended nearly a year after an incident happened? I find that to be very ridiculous. If they were going to penalize him after seeing the video in April, mind you, it's now September, nearly the middle of September, there is no reason why the NFL didn't act on this before the public found this video. And clearly, they don't realize, I guess, how much technology can move. And it's clear with the way that everything is going that Roger Goodell can lose his job. And it's not his fault. It's not Ray Rice's fault. It's the way that football players are brought up. And Kyle can attest to this. If you go to, say, Penn State, for example, like Kyle does, the athletes get extra attention, especially on the football team. They get attention from the press. They get free they get a full scholarship to a college that they're probably not even trying that hard in their classes. And that causes the attention to get to their head. Their attitudes get all messed up. And one of my professors touched on it the other day and said, look, you go to a college, any college, no football player, or most football players for that matter, don't have respect for women. And you could see that when you go to a college party or something.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you, Joseph, in a few ways. But you know what? Not all football players are dumb, as you're saying. Like, they do try in their classes. I know there's a few of them that do. It's not just everybody. But, you know, but going back to the whole Ray Rice thing, I mean, from what I remember, when they first released part of the video with Ray Rice dragging his, at the time, fiancé out of the elevator, I mean, that is disturbing. Just don't get me wrong about that. And how the NFL handled that at first, just giving him a two-game suspension. Then you see a guy like Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon getting a year suspension for smoking marijuana. So it's very complicated right now. And you know, and if the NFL knew about this, like the reports have been saying, like I want to know some more before I formulate an opinion about that. And like you said, Joseph, I mean, Goodell's job could be in trouble with this. Because if he knew about this, even though he claims he denies it right now, I think that really this could stir up a lot, you know, with the NFL. But, you know, and you know, there's just much, you know, when there's so much evidence, you know, when you see with the video that TMZ Sports released on Monday, it's just there's so much to see. And, you know, I mean, and that's pretty much kind of, and when I was thinking about what the Ravens did with the NFL, there's a lot like the Penn State thing back in 2011. I'm bringing it up because, you know, a lot of people kind of just overreacted right when it happened. I mean, they just didn't really, you know, look at the facts. I mean, yeah, like, you know, we knew about this, and same thing with the Ray Rice thing, but it's just it's so hard to comprehend right at the second, because when you're in that state, you know, you make quick decisions, and whether they're the right or wrong ones, it happens. But, you know, I mean, like with the Ray Rice thing, I mean, there's still a lot. We're going to need to know if, like I said, if the NFL knew about it or not. Like you know, even though it says that, I mean, you know, whether Roger Goodell knew or not.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I hate to say it, but others, or I don't hate to say it, rather, I like to say it. Other sports need to start paying attention to NASCAR's new Trump policy and policy for all these things, for that matter. NASCAR acts on this stuff so much better than any other sport when you think about it. You look at AJ Allmendinger's situation, Travis Kropel, and even Jeremy Mayfield in a way. I mean, NASCAR just handles these things so much better than any other sanctioning body. Do you agree on that?
I mean, with the Road to Recovery program, the drug program, I think NASCAR does a great job with that. Because, you know, I think one of the first drivers, at least, that had drug issues, I mean, was Shane Meal about 12 years ago. I mean, he had issues and he came back every time. But when he caught him that last time, it was pretty much three strikes and you're out, and he was done, you know. And then, you know, we know the whole story after that, you know, with him getting injured, of course, and that sprint car crash. But, I mean, you know, and Jeremy Mayfield, like, you know, I know he keeps, you know, saying that, you know, he will not do the Road to Recovery program, but, you know, that's his choice. You know, I mean, it's his opinion. So, but, you know, we have seen, like you said, we have seen drivers like AJ Allmendinger come back from that. And, you know, now he's in the 2014 chase for the Sprint Cup. So I think NASCAR does, you know, and it started with Kevin Harvick Incorporated, of course, with the drug program, which kind of led, you know, for NASCAR making a more serious thing, you know, with drug testing drivers. And I think they've done a great job over these last 3 years with it.
Yeah, and you know what? You can see it working because in NASCAR, the drivers come back, and they're so much stronger mentally and physically. And A.J. Allmendinger is honestly the perfect example. No, it's not a domestic abuse case, obviously, but it's somewhat similar in the way that NASCAR has a set-out program for people that get in trouble on the personal side of things. They get rid of them for a few weeks. They tell them, hey, look, let's take a step back, get your life on track, and then once you do, you can go back to the actual track and you can be competitive there. That's what's going on now, and you're seeing it in NASCAR. But for other sports like football, every single week it seems like there's it seems like there's a football player getting arrested, and it's just disgusting to see. And that's the culture of football, though. It's been like that for so many years. You have former football players and even some current ones that are being tried for murder here and there, and it's like, what are they doing back on the field after that? In NASCAR, that wouldn't happen in your wildest dreams. And this goes back to what happened this weekend in Richmond, which we'll touch on later. But when a guy does something so crazy like what we saw at Richmond climbing the fence, you have to think to yourself, is this bad or is it bad considering the circumstances? This was just bad. But for football, it's overall bad. And you're seeing it in college. Look at Johnny Manziel, what he did in college. You're telling me he deserves a football and all the, a football scholarship and all the stuff that he's getting in the NFL right now? It's ridiculous. And you don't see that in racing, and that's why racing is so much better.
Right. But we've also seen, you know, these domestic violence cases come up over here in NASCAR. Maybe a couple of them, not as common as the NFL, but then also, you know, you look at everything off the track, like speeding tickets, and I think a couple of years after the driver that got caught while intoxicated while driving and such like that, you know, we never see NASCAR step in. They just kind of let that all handle out over with the authorities. They won't issue a penalties or anything like that like the NFL's been doing and some of these other sports.
No, but not even that. It's just, also, you have to look at the way Roger Goodell handled this. Mike Helton would automatically, if he sees something like this happening, you know how fast that man would jump? He would go so fast to make sure that the person involved in the incident, or persons, rather, get the proper treatment. Forget about getting suspended. Because in the NFL, you just get suspended. They don't even help you. You're not allowed to be anywhere near your team during practice. How are you supposed to do anything productive when your entire life is being taken away and you're having struggles off the field? That's what the NFL and other sports are messing up on, and that's what NASCAR is doing well with. They're helping the people. In the NFL, if you take away, if you suspend someone for, say, 6 weeks, you're not only making them lose their pay for so many weeks, you're making them lose their livelihood. It's what they do every day. That's what they want to do. And if you're going to suspend someone, you need to help them. And that's why so frequently you see NFL players come back. Like, say for Pac-Man Jones, for example, you get suspended, you come back, you get suspended again and again and again. That's what happens in the NFL so many times. And it happens in the NBA, too, and it happens in the NHL. Not as much in the NHL, though. And you know what else? This is more of an American thing than anything, because you don't see this that often in Europe or any other continent, for that matter.
And anyone have anything else before we move on? All right. The next discussion is, you know, the on-track product, you know, has kind of not been so good the last couple of weeks. And so, you know, I was wondering what you guys think about the racing and and what NASCAR should try to improve on. So this one, I'm going to start off with Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought Atlanta was okay, and then this weekend just was god awful. You know, I mean, this is no offense to Brad Keselowski or Kyle Busch. I mean, they did a great job, you know, with the car. They're the best cars all day. And then I thought with the 54, you know, there was a rear gear issue, and then NASCAR said there was no problem. So, you know, it was clean and green there. I'm not sure what's going on right now. You know, we've had some great races, you know, before these last couple weeks. I mean, I just don't know what's up right now. I mean, you know, you saw Michigan. That was a great race. Watkins won Pocono earlier in August. I just don't know what's going on right now. I mean, I don't know if it's an aero issue. I mean, I know they're working on it right now. They had to test that, I think it was Michigan a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I think they're trying really hard to make these cars pass. Because, you know, I mean, you saw it on both nights on the weekend at Richmond. I mean, nobody really passed the leader. I mean, you know, combined the two races, I think the leaders led all but 17 laps both nights. So it just is crazy, I mean, what happened. But, I mean, you know, you still got to give those teams credit. You know, they are on the ball right now, and they did what they had to do, you know, win the race. And that's just how it is. But, you know, I have to look into it more. I mean, with this whole rules package, you know, like I said, they're working on it. So they're trying to work something out for next year so this won't be an issue.
And before we move on to the next person, I just want to throw it out there that there was five lead changes this weekend among both the Nationwide Series and the Sprint Cup Series race. So interesting point there. The next person I'm going to throw it over to is Joseph.
Yeah, this, like Kyle said, this weekend's races were kind of dull in a way. I mean, I hate to say it because I love the sport, but when you, as I said on Twitter this week, when your biggest headline is a squirrel running across the track, and then the next week, a drunk guy climbing on the fence, there is a clear and abundant and just immense problem that needs to be seen and taken care of with the competition package, really. And it's clear what NASCAR needs to do to fix it, and they're going to do it next year. You can tell they're going to do it next year just by what the driver said after the test. They're going to keep the horsepower the same, or at least lower it just a drop, so that way we don't have track records every single week. But they're going to decrease downforce, which is going to make the cars so much more competitive, and it's going to make things really exciting to watch, I feel. But as of right now, the year started out with such a great competition package, and everyone was doing so well because it was a new one, and everyone was kind of starting from scratch. But now you have teams like Brad Keselowski, Jeff Gordon, and a few others. They're just flat-out dominating in the cup level. But as for Nationwide Series, it's just really getting bad. And you can see that, and it's not good to watch at all.
Well, I agree totally. You know, this package, you know, it, as you said, started off good, but then kind of fell off the face of the earth. And there was something else I was going to say, but I kind of forgot what it was. I can't think of it at this moment. But yeah, I mean, the racing this past 2 weeks has not been what it used to be. And so I think they need to do something about it. And they are, it seems. So it should be interesting what they come up with next year. And actually, I thought I was going to say, you know, Brendan Gaughan, back in a press conference that was in Kentucky in July, stated that he would like to see a little bit lower speed because it would provide better racing, and that the fastest speed doesn't always mean the best racing. And, you know, fans, you know, they want speed. But unless you're watching a scoring monitor like Joseph and us, a lot of media members do, or unless you're at the track and you have the FanVision NASCAR, which, by the way, is awesome, you're not even going to be able to tell how fast they're going, if the speeds are faster or slower. So, you know, I think they should lower the speed. I think it would provide better racing. You know, a perfect example of this is the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series. I mean, that series provides one of the best racing platforms in NASCAR. You know, it sucks that they don't race every week or a little more than they do, but, you know, I personally will tell you, and I'm not afraid to say this on Twitter openly, that I enjoy watching the Camping World Truck Series and the Nationwide Series more than I do the sprint, of how much more competition and competitiveness it creates with the lower speeds. So my next person I'm going to throw it over to is Glenn on this topic.
Well, you know what? I've always been kind of a hater of this particular Cup car, but here's the problem that we face right now. Yes, we've been doing a lot of track records, and yes, a lot of people wanted this car, but I think that the biggest issue that we have is the style of the car and plus the rules package that we have for circuit plate racing. Now, Joseph brought up a very good point. Reducing the amount of downforce on these cars will be perfect. In fact, we did that in IndyCar. And what that did was that we reduced the downforce on oval tracks, and that allowed for a little bit spread-out racing, but there was a ton of passing because these cars could, as we call them, trim out a little bit more to give them a little bit more speed. But you got to be careful because if you trim these things out too much, you're going to end up upsetting the car so bad that you're going to end up crashing into the wall. And also, Brett is absolutely right because the Camping World Truck Series, even with its new body style, it's actually made the racing a lot better in the Truck Series. The trucks are more competitive. There's a lot of passing. There's a lot of bumping and banging. And plus, these trucks are pretty much like, you know, tough tanks, as Kyle Larson proved back at Eldora. And really, I think what needs to happen, one of the biggest elephants in the room is in the circuit plate tracks. Stop with this 605 freeway racing, and let's go back to the mix of the two-car tango and the pack racing that the Nationwide Series had. In fact, before they even changed the formula, the Nationwide Series had a mix of two-car tango and pack racing, both for the fans. And even though the cars could only bump draft for a little bit of time, that was perfect. It kept us all on the edge of our seats. So if NASCAR can just, you know, get rid of some of the packages that they're running right now, come next year, we could see some much better racing with the reduction in downforce, the reduction in horsepower, and hopefully the getting rid of the strict pack racing and bring back an old formula that provides some great racing in the NASCAR Nationwide Series.
Anything else before we move on? All right. So this past weekend at Richmond was not very good as far as the race quality, but Kyle Busch led all 250 laps of the race, and this is the second time of his Nationwide Series career that he's done this. The last time Kyle Busch did this was back in 2011 at the Phoenix International Raceway, and it was an interesting race, I guess you could put it, still as the number 28. The 55 of Jamie Dick and Kevin LePage in number 74 spun in turn 2, bring out the first caution. Second caution happened over in turn 3 involving the number 84. The next caution came out in lap 85, which wasn't very long after restart for the number 87, putting oil on the track. And then on lap 92, we saw another multi-car accident involving Jeffrey Earnhardt, the number 14 of Jeff Green, and the number 52 of Joey Gates on the back straightaway. And then on lap 167, we saw a caution for debris. And then the final caution came out on lap 227, involving the 01 of Landon Castle over on turn number 2. And, you know, I think Richmond's an awesome racetrack, but it really did not provide the action that it usually does, as we saw in previous years. moving on over into the sprint cut series race, as Brad Keselowski captured a victory after leading 383 total laps. And he goes into the chase as the number one seed. And, you know, I think right now the chase is definitely going to be interesting under this new format. We have no idea of how this is going to play out because it's definitely going to be interesting. You know, you could look at under the old system, you know, after a while, you know, it kind of gives out a trend. But, you know, this, I don't think we're going to see that. You know, under the old system, you know, you could pick out certain areas where we got to finish here or there. You know, under this new system, you know, it kind of leaves a question mark going into it. Like, how do you even race your way into the next round? I mean, unless you don't win a race, you know, you're not guaranteed into the next one. So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting how this is going to play out. And the final round, I don't remember what it's called, but the one before it goes down the four cars, it's definitely going to be interesting because if three chase drivers are still in that haven't been eliminated already, if three of those win those last three races before Homestead, they're guaranteed into Homestead, and there's one other car that I believe it goes to next highest final in point that would get that final spot. So that could be interesting. And first of all, I'm going to start off with Glenn on this. You know, well, first of all, what was your thoughts on Richmond this weekend? And secondly, you know, how do you think this chase is going to play out? Maybe just give your prediction of who might make it to the Final Four and then winning the championship.
Well, I'll go ahead and start it off. Unfortunately, for the Richmond races for Nationwide Cup, it was very tame. And plus, I think that what was going on was that in the Nationwide Series, I'm surprised we didn't see much beating and banging. In the Cup Series, I kind of feel like that everybody was kind of like tiptoeing around each other because it was the final race to lock everybody into the chase for the Sprint Cup. As for the chase drivers themselves, I actually think that this is going to be interesting to see who's going to be whittled down. But I'm gonna list four names right now of who I think are going to be in the Final Four: Johnson, Keselowski, Gordon, Harvick. Those are the four drivers that I think are going to be come down once again between Johnson and Keselowski or Johnson and Harvick. Gordon, even though he's my favorite driver, I'm putting a question mark above him because Gordon is consistent, but in the chase races, Gordon has faltered halfway through. So if Gordon can just, you know, not have a single bad race during the chase, then I could see Gordon getting his fifth title this year.
All right, and because Joseph or Yosef keeps changing Kyle's tag in the QU or the Blog Talk Radio studio, I'm going to make him go last, and next I'm going to go to Kyle to give us his thoughts on Richmond this past weekend. I know we kind of already discussed it, but kind of give us your thoughts on Richmond Nationwide Sprint Cup Series race, and who do you have making the Final Four in the chase, and who do you think who one of those four drivers you choose goes on and wins the championship?
Like I said, as far as this weekend's races, they were just absolutely horrendous. I mean, you know, I know, like I said, both drivers, Brad Keselowski and Kyle Busch, did a great job dominating both races, having the best setups. I mean, there wasn't much passing, like we said. You know, definitely a good run for Chase Elliott this weekend. It felt one spot short, and actually wound up, excuse me, finishing second in both Richmond races this year Nationwide. But, you know, for Chase Elliott right now, for him and Regan Smith, I think they're the top two cars right now. No one's really going to catch them, I think, because you know, they've had the speed all season. You know, you compare them to the Jugas racing cars, and Junior Motorsports has been superior to them because of all of Kyle Busch's four wins have come on tracks a mile or shorter. And of course, with only Tyler at Talladega, but that's an exception because that's Talladega, and it's a restricted plate track. So, and of course, Sam Hornish Jr.'s victory at Iowa. Yeah, as for Saturday, I mean, there wasn't really much drama as we expected. I mean, Clint Boyer ran up there, Jamie McMurray ran up toward the front, but really never made an impact. I mean, Clint Boyer was second at one point, but just can never catch the two car because that's how good Brad Keselowski was. So, I mean, I think when I think about it, with Casey Kane's victory at Atlanta, how huge that was for him and how devastating it was for Clint Boyer. Because, you know, with Clint, I mean, he's been around that chase bubble for the last month or two. And then with Casey Kane winning that race, it eliminates the spot. So, really, all Greg Biffle and Ryan Newman were clean nights. And, you know, you really didn't hear much of those chase bubble guys going up there and getting a win. So, you know, it's kind of uneventful, but, you know, that's how it is. You know, with Clint Boyer not making the chase, kind of ironic for Michael Waltrip Racing. You know, they had two cars in the chase in 2012, and one car last year with Boyer. Before the whole incident last year, and then none this year. So, you know, it kind of might be starting to bite them a little bit from what happened in the fallout of last year. So, I think it's going to be a great chase. You know, we have some new first-time winners, you know, with Eric Almirola, A.J. Allmendinger. I think that's great to see them in victory lane, you know, especially for A.J. Allmendinger, you know, with what's going on. You know, with him winning at Watkins Glen and overcoming everything he's had to deal with in the last couple of years. You know, all the success he has, all the ups and downs he's had, and, you know, he's a winner in the Sprint Cup Series. So, my final four for the chase right now, of course, is Jimmy Johnson, Brad Keselowski, Jeff Gordon. He's been doing really well right now, and I think my fourth driver is going to be tough. I've been kicking this around. I'm probably going to take Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, it's hard to pick. I was stuck between Dale Jr. and Kevin Harvick. They've both been pretty quick. And Harvick, you know, he's done a great job this season with Stuart Haas Racing. And then, of course, you know, hearing what's going on with the pit crew swap. So I think it's really interesting to see how that's going to affect him in this chase and actually might help him. You know, kind of like what, you know, what the 48 team did that one year with the 2014 swap and pit crews. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting chase. You know, I'm still interested to see how Homestead's going to play out when I'm thinking about all this because I'm still a little uncertain about Homestead. What's going on with that race, and, you know, having four guys go at it once, I mean, you know, make NASCAR rethink it for next year, will they keep it? So, trying to make that Game 7 moment, like, you know, we saw in 2011, so it's going to be a great chase, I think, you know, especially with the cutoff being Dover after the first three races, then Talladega, and then Phoenix, so it's going to be an interesting chase, and, you know, I'm miles going to glue to the television. And even with the Nationwide and the Truck Series as well, I mean, those battles are going to go right down to the end. So I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season and, of course, you know, going into next year as well.
And then I should just go through every single topic again and just let Joseph give his responses because he won't quit changing my tag. But I'm going to be nice to him anyway. And Joseph, what do you think about the Richmond Nationwide Series race and the Sprint Cup Series race, even though I know we kind of went over it in the last topic? And give us your four drivers that you think will make it to the final round of four drivers, and which one of those do you think will win the championship?
Well, let's start the Nationwide race. It was abysmal. Like, as you guys said, it was just an awful race. It wasn't awful because Kyle Busch led every single lap. No, it was awful because not only did Kyle Busch lead every single lap, but there was no passing going on around him or behind him, for that matter. Once you got into a position on a green flag run, which there were a lot of long green flag runs on Friday night, you could not make any passes whatsoever. And it clearly had an effect on the racing. And the only time that you saw passing was on the restarts or after pit stops. So it was a really bad race, and the problem is with the Nationwide cars, they're too easy to handle because they have such little horsepower. Like the Cup Series, they need to get rid of the downforce advantage. These cars aren't supposed to be easy to drive. They're supposed to be the most difficult but most fun racing there is. So it shouldn't be like that at all. But I was very impressed once again by Chase Elliott, how he was able to keep up with Kyle Busch for the majority of the race. But the biggest thing in my mind was how Dakota Armstrong earned his best career finish at Richmond. That was very impressive. He finished seventh after struggling all year round. He's been doing terrible. So that was definitely a good sign to see. And then you have a guy like Dylan Kwasniewski. He's slowly working his way to become more consistent, but it's going to take a little more, I feel, especially if everything that's going around on at Turner Scott Motorsports. Then you have James Buescher, who's just having a terrible season. This weekend, though, he's going to be teammates to Daniel Suarez, who's going to be racing the number 20 car next year for Joe Gibbs Racing. Sorry, yeah, 20 car, I believe, for Joe Gibbs Racing on a full-time basis in the Nationwide Series. So that's going to be interesting to see how he does this weekend of RAB Racing. Then for the Cup Series race, I don't have much to say other than the fact that the biggest headline was a guy walking on top of the fence. The fact that that happened, that it was even able to get on top of the fence, is just crazy in of itself. I mean, how does security, we've all been to racetracks on the fan side of things and on the other side, so it's like, how in the world could that happen? As for the race itself, it wasn't too bad. It could have been like the Nationwide race. It could have had a little more passing, I believe. The intriguing part to me was how the high side was coming in for the race. I have never seen that before in my life at Richmond. So I thought that was very interesting to watch. I thought it was Kevin Harvick was using that line the best, I believe. And it was just interesting to see. And then a guy like Eric Almirola, he's a long shot to make it past the first round. But you know what? He's coming off of a 10th place finish at Richmond. It's kind of how he's been running all year when you think about it. He's been quietly consistent inside the top 15 on a weekly basis, which is why I wasn't surprised when he won his race. And prior to the season, I spoke to him in January, and he was just so confident with everything that's going on at Richard Petty Motorsports. I had a feeling that that 43 car was going to make the chase, and they did. So I wouldn't be surprised if he does get past the top 12, the first cutoff, but I don't have him listed. I do believe that going into Homestead, Brad Keselowski, Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, and Kevin Harvick are going to be duking it out for the championship. They have been the four most consistent drivers this year. You could throw in the possibility of Joey Logano or Carl Edwards, but I really don't think, I feel like somewhere in between Martinsville, Texas, and Phoenix, those guys are going to have a bad race. But Carl Edwards has been good at Texas in the past. But then you look at the intermediate program for Roush Fenway Racing. It's not there. And that's going to prove to be a big one for moving on a championship. And for the title, I have Jeff Gordon. I mean, how can you go against him when he's having such a good year, you know?
Good point. And, you know, I kind of thought this over. And one of the things I've been seeing on Twitter is that, and I'm sure Joseph and everyone here will agree with me, you know, you look at media members' bracket and you like to compare it with others, and it seems that pretty much most of them have the same drivers to win a championship. I mean, you know, one might have maybe one or two differences, but it seems almost every bracket I've seen, you know, at least one media member has the same two drives as another one does, you know, it's just kind of mixing around with the group of drivers. I mean, not each of them are the same, but, you know, most of them, you know, is the same two drivers as someone else has. But, you know, with my bracket, I believe I have Keselowski, Logano, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Jr. as my four drivers. But, you know, I'm gonna throw it out there that I think the driver who's going to win championship, I believe it's going to be a Penske driver. I mean, they just flat out failed this year. And Keselowski and Joey Logano just had an impressive season. So, you know, I don't know which of those two are going to win championship. You know, but I just threw one driver in, and that was Joey Logano. But if he doesn't, you know, I think it's going to be Brad Keselowski. You know, it's definitely going to come down, I think, though, between a Hendrick car and a Penske car. And I'm sure, you know, and I'm sure that, you know I don't have no Stuart Haas racing cars, but I'm sure that one of them probably will be up there, and I'm sure that it's going to come down to those three.
Who do you have for the championship?
Logano. That's who I put down, but I'm kind of leaning towards one of the Penske cars. I could decide, but, you know, I just threw Logano down there. I don't know why. I just did.
I don't know. Logano's a little – he hasn't proven that he's championship caliber. I think he has the talent to do it and the cars to do it. We just haven't seen him down the stretch in this situation before.
And it's definitely going to be interesting to see how well he's going to do because, I mean, I think he's only made the chase one of – I think this is the second time he's made the chase of his career, I think. I'll have to gargle it after the show and find out.
Yeah, you're going to gargle it?
Yeah.
All right, well, you better get some mouthwash while you're at it.
All right. Here's an interesting news topic that that kind of came up the last couple of days, and that is Daniel Suarez to race for his second start in the NASCAR Nationwide Series at Chicagoland Speedway. He is also scheduled to run the ARCA race at Kentucky Adventure Motorsport. And there's more. He's also planning to run the Talladega Truck Race in October. So, first of all, I'm going to go to Kyle because he's kind of our ARCA encyclopedia and our encyclopedia for the younger drivers coming up from the NASCAR Canyon Pro Series to lead us off with this topic.
Yeah, it's definitely a good move for Daniel Suarez running this race because, you know, this race is going to be stacked next week. And, you know, there's guys like Ben Rhodes. I think Brandon Jones might be running it too. Cody Coughlin's going to be in it. I mean, you're going to have a lot of drivers running this race, even Kyle Weatherman for the Rudo brothers. You know, he's in that deal with Ralph Shenway Racing, the developmental deal. So you're going to see a lot of drivers test this next week. And, you know, I think, you know, with how that works, and I know you and I were talking about this earlier, Brett, is that I think, you know, they have to do the tests first before they can get approved to run the race. And I know, you know, he is going to run the 18 car next year. That is Daniel Suarez Nationwide. So definitely some good experience for him this weekend because, you know, with K&N, I mean, I think they run tracks, and this is with the exception of road courses. They're on tracks 1 mile or smaller, so, you know, they really don't have that big track experience. I think the biggest short oval track they're on is Loudon, and that's just over a mile at 1.058 miles. So, you know, it's definitely good, you know, that ARCA has this rule that you can let 17-year-olds like Ben Rhodes and Kyle Weatherman can run. And, you know, you have the other guys as well. I mean, I remember, like, when they used to run at Talladega in October, the season finale. I mean, you see a lot of drivers. I think you saw drivers like Kyle Busch, and I remember this Craig Kinsler when he was trying out NASCAR now in the World Outlaws. So you see some big names in the last couple races just to get some extra track time and get prepared for the next season. So I think this is going to be great for Daniel Suarez. And I didn't hear much about, like, about the truck deal. I mean, I'm guessing it's going to be a third Kyle Busch Motorsports truck, but do not quote me on that. Because, you know, they had three trucks last year, and of course they had the fourth one, even though it wasn't Kyle Busch Motorsports, it was with Bragg Motorsports and Parker Kligerman, but still it was a KBM-affiliated truck. So I think it's really interesting what's going to happen with Daniel Suarez. I mean, I really would not have liked to see him get moved up this fast to Nationwide. I think he may be the truck series, but you know what, that's in the hand of Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, and he has a sponsor in Aris. So, you know, and he's running the Nationwide race this weekend. He's going to attempt it at Chicagoland with RAB Racing. It might be I'm thinking this has to be like in conjunction with JGR. I'm not entirely sure on that, but, you know, so the more track experience he could get, the better. So I think the Kentucky race will help him out for sure.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That running that race is going to be great for him, especially since he really hasn't been on major tracks against such good competition. He's going to be racing against some amazing drivers, and he's definitely going to learn a lot during that process. And it's just, the ARCA series is a lot better than the K&M Pro series, in my opinion, mainly because they run on such bigger tracks. And that's what's the biggest difference. They're both the same car, basically. It's just that with ARCA, even though you don't have as good as competition as K&N does in the West and the East, you still get that advantage of getting laps against competitive drivers on the biggest tracks in the sport, like Talladega, like Kentucky, and all these other tracks.
Yeah, ARCA and K&N East are both great series, but, you know, I think what's nice about ARCA is, you know, you see some of the tracks at the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series runs on, like Chicagoland, Michigan, Daytona, Talladega, Kansas, Kentucky. You have those tracks, and they run that every single year. I mean, K&N, there are a few tracks like Dover and New Hampshire, but you know, it's nice though when you have that ability to go and hope maybe feel the car and, like, you know, like I said, like Kentucky next week, and then get you that experience you need. That you're going to, even for Daniel Suarez, I mean, hopefully that truck race he runs, you know, in Talladega hopefully approves him next year, so he won't have to run the Daytona ARCA race, so, you know, in order to get approval for Nationwide. So I think, they're both great series, and, you know, you see so much talent. I mean, look at Ben Rhodes, you know, just won the championship, and he had an outstanding season, you know, winning four in a row at one point. And getting, I think, five wins on the season. So, and there's one race left. So, and same with K&N West. I mean, that battle is only 15 points right now between points leader Craig Purley and Dylan Lupton. So I think, you know, there's still a lot to do. I mean, even in ARCA with Grant Enfinger and Mason Mitchell, that's been one of the best battles of the season. And Grant Enfinger switched teams as well, going to Gallagher Motorsports after the Chicagoland race in July. So there's still a lot left, and those are great series to come out of.
Yeah, and plus they have guys like Ken Schrader Racing and Frank Kimmel, which is the biggest thing, I think, because they get that experience of racing against a veteran, and that's just priceless, you know?
All right. Anything else on this topic before we move on? All right. It was announced earlier, well, actually last Thursday, I believe, that NASCAR made a format change for the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series qualifying at Talladega. And on this topic, I'm going to start it off with Glenn.
All right. Well, I only got a chance to see it briefly, but going out there in smaller packs, I think that's probably a good idea, because not only does it, you know, reduce the risk of having a big wreck in qualifying, but it also, you know, makes for a little bit of a cleaner qualifying session, because like what we saw back at the first Talladega race and also back at the Coke Zero 400 qualifying session, everybody was kind of like just forming a giant pack. And it was almost like one very quick race or something like that. It was almost like a timed race. So I'm glad that they decided to clean it up a little bit, and it'll just make for a little bit better qualifying procedure.
Yes, I.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated, I think, for the average fan. But once they get on track, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. And it's going to make things more excited. And looking over the rules, it's really not that complicated to understand. I think it's just fans got drawn away by the fact that there were so many different things that were on the list.
All right, Kyle.
Yeah, I'm still a little confused with the format. I mean, I it sounds like it's going to be better, but I want to see it first because, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, you've seen them in packs, but, you know, the fastest drivers in the pack, whether they be, it doesn't matter where they are. I mean, they get, you know, whoever's on the pole, it's the fastest speed in those packs. It doesn't matter. So I think it's going to be interesting to see and how it's going to play out when we come to Talladega this October.
All right, before we move on to last topic, I think I might have skipped Glenn in the last topic about, what was the last topic? Maybe I didn't. Anyway, I can't remember what that was, but I apologize if I did skip you. Our next topic is Stewart Haas Racing made a picture change excluding the gas man. They kept the same one for both teams, but they made a massive picture change between the number 4 and the number 14 teams. And so for this topic, I'm going to start off with Glenn.
You know, swapping the pit crew around, that could work because, unfortunately, Harvick has been hit with bad pit crew syndrome one too many times, mostly in the Nationwide Series and sometimes in the Cup Series. So swapping the pit crew around, you know, that puts a lot of pressure on the 14 team's crew, but at least he may have a better deal because, you know, since the boss isn't in the chase and you have, like, two of your cars, Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick, in there, why not go ahead and give them your pit crew, and then you could take Harvick's pit crew and shift them up a little bit. So I think this will definitely we'll have to wait and see how they do in the Chicagoland race. I mean, if they do flawlessly, then that's good. But I think the instant that they screw up or we see a 15 to 17 second pit stop from the 14, Harvick is going to give us some pretty good radio feedback. That will be bleeped out a lot.
All right. Joseph, did I go to you for this topic? My mind is... I forgot.
What did you say? What happened?
Did I forget you the last topic? I don't know why I think I forgot you, but it feels like I did.
I have no clue what you said.
Can somebody stop hitting the refresh button on Brett's mind?
Brett, you're getting too old for this.
I am. I am, Joseph. All right. Because my mind kind of quit, I am now going to turn the hosting tables over to Glenn to begin the open wheel report. So take it away, Glenn.
Alrighty, thank you very much, Brett. Hey, what's going on, everybody? So we've now come to the open wheel side of things, and we've got a big time preview for you. We'll be previewing the Formula E series, but before we get to that, we got to do a little reviewing in F1. The F1 series this past weekend ran at the famed Monza circuit for the Formula One Gran Premio de Italia 2014. And I'll just give you guys a second, take a quick who won the poll and also who qualified second. Time's up. Yep, it was Mercedes again. And after 53 laps of racing, nobody could catch Lewis Hamilton, who won yet again this year, and it takes another win at the same circuit with his teammate Nico Rosberg finishing right behind him. So let's take a look at the finish in order and see where your favorite driver finished. As I said, Hamilton and Rosberg locked out the front row. Felipe Massa and the Williams Mercedes finished third. Good finish for him. His teammate Valtteri Bottas finished fourth. Daniel Ricciardo and Sebastian Vettel finished fifth and sixth. Sergio Perez finished seventh. Jenson Button finished eighth. Kimi Raikkonen finished ninth. And rounding out the top ten with Kevin Magnussen. Now, Magnussen did finish P7, but had 5 seconds added to his race time for forcing a driver off the track. So he goes from 7th to 10th. Daniel Kvyat encountered a 10-grid spot penalty for an engine change, so he's finishing 11th. Nico Hülkenberg finished 12th. Jean-Éric Vergne finished 23rd. Pastor Maldonado finally finishes the race. He finished 14th. Adrian Sutil finished 15th. Roman Grosjean finished 16th. Kamui Kobayashi, 17th. 18th, Jules Bianchi. 19th, Marcus Ericsson. Ericsson had to start the race from pit road because he failed to yield to the yellow flag during qualifying, and he was disallowed on his time. And Esteban Gutierrez finished 12th. He finished P19, but he had 5 seconds added to his race time as well. Fernando Alonso and Max Chilton were the only drivers to fall out of the race. Alonso for ERS trouble, and Chilton was involved in an accident. Where did F1 go? Well, they get a week off until next week when we head to the brilliant Singapore Raceway, the Formula One Singapore Airlines Singapore GP at the Marina Bay Street Circuit, which is always a lot of fun. We will have a full-on preview of that race next week. So now we go into some historic stuff here because the Formula E series is in action as they make their debut season. Now, what is Formula E? Well, Formula E is a brand new series that is not going to use cars that run on fuel. The cars are run off of batteries. That's right. This is an all-electric series that we're going to be checking out. And this format is going to be very interesting. As a matter of fact, let's say with the car itself. The car is dubbed a Renault Spark SRT01E. The car is actually very nice looking. And here's what the power it has. The max power, which is limited, it'll have 200 kilowatts, which equals 268 horsepower. And it will also have about 170 torque as well. In race mode, it'll only have about 150 kilowatts, which equals 201 horsepower, and they'll get an additional 30 kilowatts, which is 40 horsepower, for the push to pass. Maximum power will be available during practice and qualifying sessions, but during racing, power-saving mode will apply with the push to pass system temporarily allowing maximum power for a limited time. The amount of energy can be delivered to the MGU, or the motor generator unit, by the Rechargeable Energy Storage System, or RES, R-E-S-S, it's limited to 30 kilowatts, and so there you have it. But the top speed for this car is 140 miles an hour, and it can go from 0 to 62 miles an hour in 3 seconds. That is the estimated time. And these cars are going to be interesting. Once they get out there. And we did see a little bit of what these cars can do out there on the track. And they're going to be fairly quiet, too. In fact, they almost sound like little RC cars going by. So if you've ever heard an RC car go by, like one that has, like, you know, torque and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not talking, like, you know, the ones that have batteries, like you can get at a Target or Walmart. I'm talking, like, custom ones. Now, for this series, there are 20 drivers spread out amongst 10 teams, and guess what, people? We finally have the number sheet for everybody. So now everybody has a number to their car. So let's go ahead and take a look at the 10 teams and the 20 drivers that will make up the Formula E grid. Starting out, I will go in numerical order for this one. Starting out with the Virgin Racing team, this is a British team. Their team is going to feature Sam Bird in car number 2 and former F1 Series driver Hari Yogeshwari in car number 3. The Mahindra team, the India team, will have the number 5 car being driven by Karun Chandhok, And the number 21 car will be driven by Bruno Senna. The Dragon Racing team, one of the American teams, one of two American teams, will have the Spaniard Oriol Servia in car number 6. Meanwhile, Jerome D. Ambrosio will race car number 7. Over at the Edom Renault team, Nicholas Prost will be in the number 8 car, and Sebastian Buemi, former F1 driver, will be in car number 9. The Trolley GP team has Michelle Cerruti in car number 18. She's Italian, and Jarno Trulli will be in car number 10. Off to the Audi Sport team, they will run with the number 11 car being driven by Lucas Degrassi and the number 66 of Daniel Abbott. He is a GP2 driver. The Venturi Grand Prix team has Stephanie Zarzin in car number 30. He's a Frenchman. And also Nick Heidfeld in car 23. The Andretti Autosport team, car number 27, is being driven by Frank Montagny. And according to what I have here, Charles Tick, former Caterham driver, will run in the second Andretti Autosport car, number 28. Meanwhile, the Amin Agari team has Antonio Felix da Costa in car 55 and possibly Fabio Lemar or Lemire in that car. A Catherine Legg will drive the number 77 car as well. And finally, China Racing has its drivers. Ho Pin Tung will be in car number 88, and Nelson Piquet Jr. will run car number 99, and they have a reserve driver in the form of Antonio Garcia. So where are these guys racing? Well, this weekend they're going to head to Beijing, China for the Beijing E3. So where are these guys going to be racing, and how does the season work? Or better yet, how does the race weekend work? Well, here's how the racing format is going to go. So, here's how it works. In the early morning, there will be a free practicing session followed by qualifying. Late morning session, there will be qualifying where each driver has one lap in both cars A and B. A and B, you're asking. I'll get to that in just a second. Then after that, there's a bit of 2 hours of downtime to recharge these cars. So imagine being on your iPad for a long time and having to recharge it. It takes 2 hours to recharge these things. Then in the evening, all these races are going to be nighttime. It'll be the race with two stints and one pit stop. But this pit stop is not going to be for making adjustments and all that kind of stuff. No, it's going to be for changing over to the cars. So pit stops will involve a car change. When the battery runs out, a driver will make a planned pit stop and switch into the new fully charged car. And the racers, it looks like they're going to be timed, so they're going to be timed for 45 minutes. The point standings, here's how the points counted, very similar to what they do in F1. So if you win, you get 25 points. If you finish second, you get 18. Third is 15. Fourth is 12 points, fifth is 10, and then it goes 8, 6, 4, 2, 1, and so only the top 10 are going to score points. Now, you do get 2 bonus points for getting the fastest lap of the race award, and you get 3 points if you win the pole. So that'll be a lot of fun, especially to see who's going to get those. So where are they going to be racing? Well, as I said, they're going to be racing in China, and if I could just find the tab again that I had the thing, here it is. They're going to be running around this newer track, the Beijing Olympic Green Circuit. It's a street circuit that will be first to be used on the 13th of September. It will run along the ground of the Bird's Nest, the Olympic Stadium, used in the 2008 Olympic Games. It features 20 turns. Choosing location and designing the track has been done. And it's actually a fairly simple circuit for the most part, with a couple of chicanes, and this is a huge circuit, so we'll see who wins. In fact, I don't even have a prediction for who I think is going to win, because all the cars are exactly alike. All the cars pretty much have the same power. It's just now on skill, which, by the way, next year, in 2016, we will actually see these cars get some identity to them. That way, they do not look the same. So where are they going to race? First off, here in September, it's going to be China. Then, on November 22nd, they're going to be heading to Malaysia, and they're going to be racing the Putrajaya Street Circuit. I hope I said that right. And then on December 13th, they're going to head to Uruguay for the Punta del Este Dupree, and then they take another month off, and then they go on January 10th, 2015, to Argentina for the Buenos Aires EP. There is an open date for February 14th, 2015. We're not sure what track is going to take that schedule. Miami is going to have a race on March 14th, and then it's off to Long Beach for an early deal, but they're not going to run the whole thing. Let me see here. Oh, yeah, and then we have the then we have Monaco, a huge race for them. That's going to be on May the 9th, but we're not sure if it's going to be on the actual Monaco circuit or if it's going to be from someplace else. Then on May 30th, we go to Berlin to race at the airport in Germany, and then we crown the first ever Formula E champion at Battersea Park in London. So there are the nine races that we have so far, but we should gain another one here very soon. And just like that, folks, we have come down to the end of our show. We want to thank everybody for tuning in, and also
Pleasure
I do want to call
that.
Okay. Okay, you have a news item for us, Brett.
Yeah, Parker Kligerman to test an Indy Lights car this, or I'm not sure when it is, but at Indianapolis Motor Speedway for Sam Smith Pearson's.
That's right. I almost forgot. That's right. Parker Kligerman is scheduled to run a test in the Super Tire Indy Lights Series for Smith Pearson Racing. This should be interesting to see what happens because, as we know, Parker Kligerman runs in the different NASCAR series, trucks, Nationwide and Cup, all those other things, and now he's going to try his hand at the Indy Lights series. If he comes over, that would be very huge because that would also bring a lot of fans over as well. So we'll see how well he does, and we'll give you some updates as we go along.
I think
it would
be interesting because, you know, Parker Kligerman grew up racing the open wheel style cars, and that was a path that he was going to take before he decided that he wanted to race stock cars instead. And the stock car thing really hasn't worked out for him. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how he's going to do. And I hope they offer timing and scoring for this because I'd like to see how he stacks up with the other drivers who are testing as well. You know, we saw this last year that Carlos Munoz moved up from the Firestone Indy Lights series from having a very successful year. And then he moved up to Verizon IndyCar series where he had a great year. So, you know, and then we're seeing Sage Karam possibly might be moving over to Verizon IndyCar series as well from that series. So, you know, it goes to show how strong that series is. And, you know, even though there's only like eight or nine drivers in it, you know, it seems that it's been pretty successful for the drivers to cross over. And with the new car that they're bringing, I believe in 2015, Glenn can correct me if I'm wrong, but the 2015 Indy Lights cars are going to be similar in the cockpit-wise as a Verizon Indy car, so it's a little bit easier for drivers to transfer over. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how that series is going to be in 2015. And also, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how much better it's going to make the younger drivers and develop them whenever they do move up to that Verizon IndyCar series.
Oh, yeah, and you said something very important there, and you're absolutely right. The new Indy Lights chassis does make for a smoother transition because the old package that we had, I like to call it the IL05, that one was better suited for the IR5 that we used to run in IndyCar, and here it's sort of like taking the IR5 and kind of like making it safer and bringing it into the Cooper Tire in the Light series. In terms of timing and scoring, I'm not sure if they're going to make it available, but we'll see if they do. I mean, I can't imagine that IndyCar.com is not going to pass up an opportunity. I mean, come on, with the off season and a bunch of fans, you know, running around like, you know, hungry hyenas trying to find something to to, you know, share their IndyCar craze, I'm sure that that they will put something up like that. So I guess now we've come to the end of the show, and since Brett's still on, he can take us right out of here, but I'll say my final thoughts. You guys can follow me on Twitter at IndyCarGL2488. You can also follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/IndyCarGL2488. And on next week's show, I'll have a full preview of Singapore for F1, and we'll have a review of the first ever Formula E GP. It's supposedly supposed to be on Fox Sports 1 for us to view. However, on my guide, I don't see what time it begins. Now, if it's a night race in China, that means it could be a morning race for us. So I'll keep tabs on it, and once we have something, you'll see it on any one of our times. On our pages. So anyway, I'll see the Speedway Digest Posse next week, and hope to see you guys at the track very soon. Take care.
And that concludes the Speed Digest. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and hope everyone has a great week, and talk to you all next week.